The American Experience with Ernesto Palomino.
Okay, so the biggest point, okay, so check this out. Every time that you see one of these videos, so you see the paranormal investigators, they're going out there, they're going in places that are like abandoned. No human has ever been here. Pay attention to the surroundings. And I know this for a fact because I come from a graffiti background. Pay attention to the surroundings, and every time that they go into these abandoned buildings, there's always graffiti. There's always graffiti.
That's very true.
What does that tell you? The graffiti artists are not afraid of anything. You go up high, up low, and there's always graffiti. And a lot of the times, I almost 100% think, because if I'm doing like some illegal graffiti and I'm out there in the middle of nowhere in an abandoned building,
anywhere where he's been,
so
he said illegal graffiti.
So there's people coming in with like cameras and sound systems and things like that. And I'm doing illegal graffiti. The first thing I'm gonna do is hide and run away. And so what they're doing is coming in like, yo, there's ghosts, there's this, and then they hear a noise, you know, and things shifting, you know. I'm almost 100% of the time, I'm sure that's a graffiti artist running because they're afraid they're gonna get caught. It never misses. Pay attention to the surroundings. Abandoned building, like this place has been abandoned for years, but there's brand new graffiti on the walls. So,
man, hey dude, that, I always wanted to put that out there. B-roll right there, man. All right, so, oh my god, man, what an opening. my name is Ernesto Palomino, and you are listening to the American Experience. We want to thank our partners and sponsors, Maximon Media Group. Today in the building, we are fortunate and very blessed to have Carlos Jaciel, local Dallas artist extraordinaire. Dude has been on the scene making noise for like the last decade, at least from what we know. And, you know, oh my God, man. And I'll open up the floor to you just momentarily. But, you know, artist to artist, man, I feel like the creative energy this guy brings, his spirit, his energy, how he talks about his projects, the way he influences and inspires others is just phenomenal, man. And you could feel it in the building. And as soon as you start just talking to him, he just has a plethora of like viewpoints that he just, I mean, as you know, like, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself, he, you know, his start into the game was so just, I would say, sheer just mischief, and it allowed him to just open up that door to that unconventional way of doing things. And I don't want to speak for him, but I mean, just there was a story that he shared with me as to how he got into it, and just, I guess for me, was like, that doesn't really follow the conventional ways that an artist, or I would say, like, You go to college, you get that degree, then you go into the scene. But he was just a trailblazer in his own way, because in our culture, we're kind of, I guess, trained and programmed to, you do good in school, you go do your homework, and you apply yourself and do it. But he was able to kind of nurture that craft early on and just find his way. And along that, he has been able to touch just people to inspirational heights, I would say, just personally, just the impact that he's had on me. But anyway, I want to open up the floor to him. He was gracious enough to come in, masking everything, just kind of gave us a little preview into just what was that, a paranormal paranormal graffiti, the truth. Where they cross paths, and some just but anyway, I want to just give a, you know, warm welcome to Jaciel. Just kind of open up the, you know, coming in.
Appreciate that. No problem, that's a hell of an intro, man. I appreciate that. I don't know if I could keep up to those standards, but I mean, I could try.
Oh, man. No, first of all, man, just thank you for coming in, man. I know we haven't caught up in a spell, man, with everything that's been going on. Just to even just to start off, but then also, you know, I've been following you on your Instagram, and just kind of the things you've been doing. I know I reach out to you from time to time, text you, hey, man, you know, what do you do with this? I ask you for knowledge, man, and you've been more than gracious every time. With you, I would imagine, like, I don't think you sleep, bro. I think you're just, like, always up, daydreaming, painting. And I'm true. Like, man, this dude's not going to return my text. And they're like, bing. I'm like, oh! I'm like, man, I need to share this, y'all. But, no, I when D came to me with just the idea of putting together a show, mm-hmm. I really just kind of took, first of all, I didn't want to make it sportsy. I didn't want to make it political. I really just kind of was like, well, what if I just come from the angle of the American experience mm-hmm. as to our culture, you know, and make it inclusive. And I know that the things that bring us together are art, music, sports, mm-hmm. you know, and those ideals and our experiences.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, I was like, dude, I got to get Aciel on, man. I think this guy, you know, on the scene, like there's beautiful murals around the city that sometimes people are like, who did that? And you see people just posing and don't even know. Yeah. Don't even know. I'm like, man, that's my boy. I could see, like, I know. I walked so many times to Sirius Peaks and I'm like, my boy did that mural. And everybody like, sit your ass down. But just, you know, just to be able to say, man.
And that was the people working, the way they talked to you. Yeah. Like, that was the people working. Shit your ass down, bro.
Before you got here, I shared a story with D here who, you know, we both know Matt. We all know mm-hmm. Matt. Matt, yeah. If you're listening, congrats on the Amazon job, man.
Miss you.
Yeah, man. Blessings, bro. And I remember your artwork was up at this lounge down in Lower Greenville, man. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of the joint, but so I remember I came in one day and I said, hey, man, my boy SS coming in. He's a local artist. And he's like, oh, have I seen any of his work? And I was like, you may have. I was like, he was like, have you ever been to, I don't remember the name of the
Zubar?
Joint. Zubar, yes.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, you know, he's got those portraits of, like, you know, the eyes and the hands. And his eyes just lit up and was like, bro, like, I love that piece. And I was like, that's him. I was like, man, I was trying to find out who did that. And I was like, man, will he be here in like 30 minutes? You want to meet him? I remember you walked in the building and he was like, bro.
Yeah.
Such a fan. Oh my god. And I was like, you're literally geeking out right now, man. Yeah. Like but that's the extent of the power that you just energy that you got, bro.
And a lot of the times is honestly it's not me, because I'm a very boring person, man. Like I walk around and people are like, wait, man, you almost disappear, because there's no it's my artwork, man. I dedicate everything and I'm thankful for what I do. It's just my expression into the art form, and I think people, I'm glad that they see that, and I'm glad that they sense and they pick up all that stuff, because it really does mean a lot. It comes from a place of just being able to be creative and being able to express that, those emotions. So
yeah,
it's kind of cool. And I remember, so Matt is that day that I came in, he was really excited, but also there was a mural that we had just finished on Bishop's Arts.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I drive through there every single day and I recognize, and that's your work too. And he's like, oh my god, you know. And I was like, you know what, Matt, that's very cool. And so what I did, because he was such a great guy, and I love Matt, man, he's fantastic, I brought him the original sketch to that mural.
That's right. That's right. He had it framed.
Yes. That's so right. I brought him that, and he was just like, oh my god, are you serious? And I was like, yes, yes. If anybody, man, you gotta take care of it. So
he would, I'm sure it's still hanging up in his wall somewhere. Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. One of the things that you were just saying is you know, driving through Bishop Arts and some of the areas around Dallas that you've been able to kind of, you know, legally, I would say.
Legally, yeah. That's a lot of legal stuff. Just getting back into the illegal stuff recently, which is kind of fun. No, I'm kidding.
It's like really just kind of, you know, going through the process of it, man. Like, yeah. I'm always, like, curious to know, like, first of all, like, who comes to you or finds you and says, hey, dude, I want you to tag up my wall and do this?
You know what? It's really, it happens quite a lot. It happens quite a lot. I mean, obviously, whenever you're doing a mural, the mural automatically opens more doors, because everybody sees you paint and everybody's like, hey, man, you got a car, you got this, you got this. So that instantly automatically does that. But every time you do a mural, it's a constant, like, advertising, you know, that's why companies like McDonald's and everybody else spend so much money in advertising, because advertising works. The same thing with a mural. You have a mural, it's constantly being showcased to people that never thought about looking up your work. So you're not just getting the fans of your work, but you're also getting the people that don't even care about you getting to look at this. And if it vibes with them and it's something cool that they love, absolutely, if they have an opportunity that comes by, they're like, yo, hey, man, this is happening. Would you be interested in coming in and just maybe talking it out and maybe coming up with a concept? And maybe we could work something out. And before you know it, you could have a mural. And I mean, little by little, one thing opens another and then another and another. And before you know it, you're just kind of expanding yourself in that horizon. So mm-hmm. that leads to more opportunities and cooler and bigger projects.
And in Adil, I want you to share the first, because I think we were definitely, we crossed paths when we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I
just we didn't just cross paths, man. I mean, we went to the same high
school. Yeah, we went to the same high school.
But it's weird because, you know, when he's giving him an intro, a beautiful intro, by the way. And he said, Carlos Hadziel, you know? And it's funny because nobody knows me as Carlos anymore. only the peeps from high school. You know, say that. Well, obviously, not everybody knows it. But yes, it's certified. That's how you know, like, okay, he's OG.
Yeah, that's how we keep it certified, man. So I remember this. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, man, but shout out to Skyline High School. We're on Skyline.
Man. Okay, cool. Representing.
So I remember there was a situation there that
an incident
where there was quite a bit of graffiti that was
it kind of showed up out of nowhere.
We went
to lunch and we were just hanging out. The next day we come back to lunch, everything happens to be bombed everywhere. Yeah. Like graffiti everywhere. And, you know, I mean, unfortunate incident that happened to the school. I mean, obviously, I don't know who did it. but all I know is I was chilling in first period, minding my own business. You know, I was what I call art class, but it was math.
It's math. Every period for him was art class.
Yeah.
Every class period.
You know, just doing my projects, taking care of business, and somebody walks in the door and it's just like, yo, we're looking for, you know, so-and-so, which, I mean, obviously it's me, and the principal wants to talk to you.
Man.
So I was just like, I wonder why the principal wants to talk to me, you
who
know?
Who snitching, bro?
Yeah, who out there knows? I mean, it looked cool. I got a picture and everything. So I walked in the principal's office and she's just angry. I mean, she is furious. She starts screaming at me for like 30 minutes, like just nonstop, making me feel like small. She said, don't even grab your stuff. Just walk out of the school. Just leave.
Like, you just like been fired?
Yeah. Like,
you just leave. You just been fired? Yeah. They're not even going to let you do the 2 weeks?
Yeah, no, not 2 weeks. No, nothing.
No resignation.
Just
you out.
No writing papers, no apology letter, no nothing. It was just like, you out. And so it was funny because I had my camera with me that day. And so that's how I have that picture, because I remember just walking out through the lunchroom, and the lunchroom splits into two. I remember out through the lunchroom, and the one that we had was lead to the car. So I had to walk through that to get into my car. So I remember just turning around and taking like the last picture of Skyline. with the graffiti and the peeps and the graffiti on the top. And she sent me to an alternative school. Like, she literally sent me to an alternative school. And that's when, you know, there was a couple of issues where, you know, situations like that made me realize that there are better ways of doing graffiti, not just, you know, getting into trouble. So it's weird because in alternative school, it was like nothing but, you know, like, I wouldn't say there were trouble kids because everybody was real cool, you know? But I mean, they got into trouble one way or another. Same as me. Like, I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to go out there and start shanking people. I mean, it was just one of those things that, like, I got in a situation and it got me into trouble. And I ended up there, and it was in downtown. Uh-huh. But the teacher that was there, she was, she already, you know, she's seen it all. She was like, there was nothing you could do to that teacher. She's seen it all. And so the thing about her is, she was like, you know what? You don't belong here. She's like, you don't belong here. I was like, I don't even want to be here either. How did you know? mentioning this, which is really crazy. So I don't know if you knew this, but this is how I found out about this. So when I was there, they had that building split into two sections, and then a complete division, right? Mm-hmm. And they would let out some people earlier than us because we were the troublemakers, right? And I was wondering, like, what's going on? You know, why is there a division? Why is it happening? It turns out that if you were in DISD during that time, oh, everything's coming out right now. They're going to come after us, man. If you were DISD, and if you were a teen and you got pregnant, they wouldn't want you in the school because it
facts.
Obviously, one thing, obviously, a pregnant woman needs a lot of more attention. It's a more delicate situation. Mm-hmm. So you can't just be around your students, but you could choose to be there or kind of keep it low key. And they would send you to that place. with the trouble kids. So the trouble kids were there, and there was pregnant women, like classes of pregnant women, like across the division. God. And they would let them out differently and stuff like that to kind of separate them. But I was just like, okay, so you have everybody that's trouble, and then you have the pregnant, innocent, you know, girls. And I was like, this can't end well.
Yeah. No.
I mean, they were, I don't know if their mentality was like, I guess they're already pregnant.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
It was so weird to me. But anyways, that's the situation that I found myself into. And the teacher was incredible. She was amazing. She was like, you know what? You got in here because you did graffiti. Apparently, you have some sort of talent. I don't know. I haven't seen it. She's like, if you could do me this amazing, you know, a piece, like a small, you know, I think it was 11 by 14 piece of paper she gave me. And she was just like, do something cool. And if I like it and it's amazing, you don't have to come back here ever again. Like, you could just, wow. I'll sign all the paperwork. You could just chill and hang out for the rest of the year, and you don't have to do anything else.
Could you imagine if we could give degrees that way now?
Oh, my goodness.
How much money
would you like, if you're an architect, just, you know, do, like, an incredible...
Just draw a blueprint, man. Yeah. Let me know what you're doing.
Obviously, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, why do you have to be here for 12 weeks?
Bounce.
Just bounce, man.
Yeah, but this is...
Write your letter of recommendation. Here, go. He cool, go.
I got you, bro. I got you.
Here.
My name has a lot of weight.
Your diploma's in the mail.
Yeah, we got you. And so I did that. And the cool thing about it is that I realized something at that moment. I realized that my artwork, it was not just going to get me into trouble, but it also could actually not just get me out of trouble, but open opportunities. And I was just like, yo, I mean, I could probably... do this. And it felt like I was like cheating the system. It felt really, I was like, oh damn, I found like cheat code, you know, it's the Konami code.
Yeah, you're the Nintendo, you're Tyson.
Yeah, up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right.
Boom. Little retro gaming for all you
30
Nintendo
lives.
Nintendo aficionados.
So the year after that, I got back into Skyline. Right. I was a good kid now. I was doing my homework, and but I was so behind because it was a full semester where they couldn't get any credits. And you know, that's like, what is it like? How many, I don't know how many credits is that. It was not enough to graduate. So what I had to do is I was working already, so I bought a bunch of, like, you could take credit by exams, and then you could just buy them. They were like $50, and I would just buy them, try to study, and you have to pass it, and they'll give you a credit for classes that you already failed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they were pretty hard, and you only get like a couple of chances, so I couldn't make them. I was like, damn. So then I took night school, and night school was... a couple of teachers, one of them who she had failed me my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. So what I did is, like, same concept. I went to this alternative school. She taught me something incredible. And I owe her. I got to remember her name because she was incredible. She was so simple. It was just, she told me a thing and it clicked. So when I was my senior year, I taking night school, taking all this stuff. And I talked to my teacher. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be famous. I'm going to blow up. I'm going to be famous. I'm an incredible artist. I could do absolutely. And then at this time, I sucked. I mean, I was nowhere near good. I was still like trying real hard. Like, I seen your coloring pencils, like skills. Mine was like 100 times less than that. Like, I could never, I don't know if you've seen them, but they're like.
I got one behind you right there, bro, that X-Men.
Yes. Like, okay. Well, X-Men is.
That's high school.
It's pretty good, but the Spider-Man that I got from you.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. Like, it's like, it looks digital. I mean, incredible.
For years, I got nothing.
Yeah.
No, but see, that's how I got that piece.
That's how he got this painting.
Yeah, because I was so, like, number one, I was gracious that. He was so gracious enough to kind of spend some time with me, just to kind of look at his process. And his lab, bro, is like so cool because it's very just what you call a shop. Like, that's an artist's shop. You know what I'm saying? He's got his canvases hanging. He's got like canvas wraps over here. He does his own frames. Yeah. He's got his electric. So I'm like, man, this is a shop, bro. Everything, acrylic. He's got, you know, spray paint everywhere. Dude, it's like a shop. And I'm like, man, this is just your car garage, bro.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, bro, but this is my shop.
Yeah.
And so he was gracious enough to allow me to spend half a day with him, dude. And just kind of looking at what he was doing. And not only that, like, his son would come in and he was like being able to to, you know, manage the time, being a dad, and then, all right, mijo, this and this and that, go do this. And then he get back to it. And just to kind of see that side of him to where, yeah, you get to see him at shows and, yo, you know, you follow him on the gram and you see those highlight reels. But to just see those moments, man, you're like, this is why he does it. You know, this is the grind of it that he nobody sees.
No, no. People don't ever understand that. It's a full-time job. You sit in front of a canvas for like 40, 80 hours with nobody around. It's just yourself and maybe some music, maybe YouTube or a movie. And you spend all this time in front of a canvas to maybe get, if you get lucky, maybe once a month, you know, get to showcase it to the people. And that's when you really talk to the individuals. And that's the only time that they talk to you. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's every once in a while, like, you know, you got that opportunity. Not everybody gets to see that. Mm-hmm. It's very private and it's a lonely process. And it has to be that way because you have to be in tune and in focus with what you're doing, especially when it's you start pushing yourself to those standards, and it becomes even more demanding as you get, you know, more intricate. So it is pretty crazy, but I mean, you know, that's the way it gets done.
I'm gonna share something with you, man, that I don't know if it resonates with you or that you remember you said this to me, man, but
oh my God.
I use it for everything that I do right now, man. Like it's part of encompassing to how I'm kind of venturing outside of my comfort zone. So we were in his garage and I was standing in front of this blank canvas. I was like, man, I don't know what to paint, bro.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm scared. Maybe I don't. And he said to me, he said, dude, God does not like cowards. And you know what? Damn. I was like, yo. Was like, how you not?
I can't take credit for that. I can't take credit for that because I got it from Ray Alvarez, if you're listening. Ray Alvarez was always telling me that shit. And I was, it's frightening. You know, like,
yeah. I was like, my spirit was like shook.
Bro. Yeah, you're like, oh, God damn, I got to do it.
Yeah, I got to do it. Yeah. So when every time I look, I'm like, man, wait a minute. God doesn't like cowards. And I just go to work. And whatever happens, happens. Whatever happens, happens. Man, that could be a t-shirt, bro. And at the end of the day.
Copyright,
y'all. Anybody out there listening, it's copyright, okay? So, yeah, so I always use that as a starting point for me whenever I'm like, man, what do I do here? What do I do? You know, and that propels me into like, you know what, man, it's all good. You know,
yeah.
I got it from here.
Yeah. And a lot of the times I think people underestimate themselves. And it's one of those things that as an individual, we have, you know, so many negative thoughts just because that's the way we're built. But once you kind of overcome that stuff and you put yourself out there, you realize that it might not be the best at that moment, but at least this one, like a small part of it is done, or you're getting closer to that level that you're looking for. And the beautiful thing about it, and people, I don't know why people feel like as soon as you get like, especially when younger, like I have nephews and things like that, when they get started, they start drawing, they feel like it needs to be like the prime finished like, product.
Yeah.
Like every stroke has to be perfect. And it's impossible to do that because we're humans. Mm-hmm. Not even the professionals do that. And the professionals learn that you can't be perfect right away. You build up to it little by little.
We were talking about Jim Lee, Alex Ross.
Oof, incredible.
You know, these guys that started in comics.
Yeah.
You know, what's his name from... Spawn,
Tom McFarlane. Yes.
Oh, amazing
huge
guy.
Fan. Huge fan.
Yeah, follow these guys, incredible. Man. And if you ever get a chance to look at their starting point, where they started and how they left,
even McFarlane. So in his book, he talks about
love it.
He
love
talks
it.
About like so he was in college and he had like a baseball. He was like going to college for baseball, but he was just like, I want to do comic books, and he was okay. He wasn't great. And you can see some of his drawings. They're not bad, but they're not like Marvel level comic books. Mm-hmm. I mean, comic drawings. And the crazy part is that he, at that moment, he knew that he wasn't that great. And he was buried down to where he knew it. But he still practiced to get to that level. But not even that. He didn't just practice. He opened doors because he was like writing, you know, Marvel, DC, all these people letters. Like on the daily.
Oh yeah.
Like over like I don't remember. I think it was like over 300 or something like that.
Yes.
Where he would just send letters to them.
Yes.
Just to get rejected, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually, one of them, you know, I think he started doing like some sort of like indie comic or something like that. And that's where he started. But then, all of this stuff. Once you put yourself in that situation, then I mean, that's technically the world's gonna speak back, you know, because you're doing something that has to do with what you want to do. Yes. And I mean, eventually these people get good. Art Germ. He's always done like this amazing, beautiful arts, and he wasn't working with Marvel or anything, because I've been following him for a minute. He was just doing like, you know, like fan art, what they call fan art. I hate that term, because they're probably just as good as everybody else. Yeah. It's like, but since you're not, you know, getting the checks by these companies, then it's fan art. Yeah. And I get it. But he was for a long time doing fan art, and then eventually was just like, yo, man, you're too good, bro. And I remember his Catwoman run that he just did DC.
Oh yeah.
Ooh.
They incredible. They have actually done 3-4 different covers.
Yes.
Just on his style.
Yes.
And like the Sirens, where it's Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy, yes.
Yes. Harley Quinn and stunning. Catwoman. Bro.
Stunning.
Yeah.
His Wonder Woman's great.
Yeah.
His Catwoman. I love her Catwoman. And then he also has a couple of them for Marvel. I know Spider-Gwen.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
dude, your Spider-Gwen was amazing, bro. Look, I was asking him, hey man, what would be a great like startup, like just pad application that I could use? He just straight up was like, oh yeah, this is the one I use. And I'm like, okay, cool. And he sent me the link. Not even 30 seconds later, sends me like a finished Spider-Man that he did. I was like, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I suck. Oh, you know what? I'm going to go back to pen and paper, man, because I suck. I just didn't even want to try it, man, because I was just like, of course. So, you know, obviously, you know, as we're talking about these comic book artists, man, I want to know like your influences, your inspirations, like who got you to where, dude, I want to try that. I'm going to push myself. This is where I want my art to be.
It's crazy because I did start with comic books. That's how I started. I think most kids, I think when they want to draw, they start with comic books. It's either that or like Disney or something weird like that. But yeah, no, I when I was younger, my brother used to collect Wolverine comic books.
Shout out to X-Men, Saturday mornings.
So he loved Wolverine because he was just so edgy, so careless, and he just looked raw. And some of this art back in the 90s and there, it was like 90s, was absolutely incredible, because they really had this freedom to especially Wolverine was just like a raw, fearless character that was just ripping people
and
apart
rugged.
And things like rugged. And they did the beard and the hair and all that stuff, and they were allowed to do, like, you know, I remember for a long time he was in the snow and he was just like almost like a wolf. And they did this incredible stuff. And so I did draw a lot of like Wolverine like characters, and the thing is, it led me to try to learn how the body works, you know, the anatomy and all this stuff, because they have muscles and they have all this stuff, and they were really focused on, like, you could literally every time they no matter how they drew superheroes, you could tell there was like a great emphasis on how every muscle worked
in their physique,
right? Yes, they're incredible at that. They could draw a person you know, jumping and spinning at the same time with their arms, you know, flailing around.
Deadpool
and you can always tell like what that pose is, and it looks realistic, and you're like, yo, how do they do this? And it's because it's years and years of studying the body how it works. So that was my number one thing. I was like, well, I guess I have to learn how the body works. And I remember like just trial and error, like just drawing, you know, hands, feet, arms, you know, coming at you forward,
perspective, right? And depth of field,
which is very difficult when you do like fingers and very hands,
and it kind of to the eye, it starts looking weird because you got this big,
and it has to look weird in order for it to work. But the difference, and this is even now in painting, it's one of those things that, like, should I paint it the way it looks, or should I paint it the way it makes sense? And it's very complicated because a lot of the times you got to choose your battles, because you can have a photograph of something that looks kind of weird whenever you photograph it. And because you know it's a real photograph, you accept it. And you're like, yeah, that's normal. That's the way it looks. It looks weird, but you don't think about it looking weird. But if I was to paint that and it looked weird, people would be like, man, why'd you do that weird finger for? You know? And it's just like, but that's the way it looks.
No,
but because it's a painting, they don't have the acceptance. So then you have to draw it where it looks good and it doesn't act out honestly be right.
You know who's one of the great ones that does that is Greg Horn. He does phenomenal work. He's done a lot of stuff for I don't want to call it fan art, but he's been commissioned by ESPN Mural. Yeah. He does a lot of great work. And he actually made an appearance at one of the Dallas Comic Cons a couple years ago, and I always stop by his booth and purchase, because he not only is he the one swiping the card, he also signs it.
Yeah.
And hands it to you in a plastic, very limited edition type of thing.
It's a real personal thing. Yeah. You're like right there with the artist. They're taking care of you.
And one of the pieces that he sold was a selfie of Batgirl with Poison Ivy and Catwoman. Yes. And that perspective was like, whoa. Yes. Not only does that cross to you, we're like, whoa, they could be doing that now, right?
But that's funny because after him, they did a couple of covers like that. Because there is a Wonder Woman cover where she's taking a selfie. Mm-hmm. And there is a few other ones where I know Batgirl, when her new costume, where she's younger with the purple, she's taking selfies constantly. She's always on the phone.
Yeah.
So it's weird because you see that. I mean, people are in tune with what how the culture is going, and they start kind of, it's a mirror. Mm-hmm. Art has always been a mirror where they reflect this culture. And the thing is that then the corporations pick up on it later. You know, that's why you always, like, you see graffiti or rap, and it's been around for like, 20 years. By the time it already gets old, then McDonald's picks it up and it's just like, oh, is this what kids are doing?
Yeah.
The same thing with that. Like, you can see the artists on like the ones that are, you know, not the well-known artists, a lot of the times they're more in tune with the culture.
Yeah, the up-and-comers.
Because they don't have a fear where this company is saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. They just do it. You know, who would have guessed to put Miles Morales in some Nikes, man.
Yeah.
That was genius. The
Spider-Universe,
that
was man.
Other artists have been doing it forever. You know, like, it's always been cool. It's always been cool.
Now there's a problem because it's Adidas.
Yeah.
and the cross-culture of it, man, is so, just so cool, because how many times growing up did we see our favorite athletes or you know, our older siblings, like, man, they got a pair of Jordans, man.
Yeah.
Or those, you know, man, they got those Feelers, man. I want them. You know, and now you get to be able to see them in animated or in art form, and you're like, because I wore those.
Yeah.
You know? And that could be just simple influence. I remember there was a mural you showed me that was influenced by your brother who had like elements of like the 90s. You had like the Super Mario gloves.
Yeah.
You had him like as a boxer. I'm sure he was doing something in
boxing. So my younger brother, he's an athlete. He's been playing football. He's been doing this. During that time, he was doing a triathlon. Mm. So he's been practicing for the past, like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months, where he was just swimming for like hours, running for like hours, biking for like hours. So finally the event came around and he was out there just like, you know, you got to go. I think you just start running. And so he was running for like 1 or 2 hours or something like that. Jeez. Then they get in their bikes and they do the same thing. And then after that, they swim. And it's like really intense, like 5 hours. They start like, it's, I think, like 5 in the morning. And then like at 12 or something like that. It's insane. So whenever he finished, that's when I snapped those pictures. When he was like, it's funny because he was exhausted. He was done, but just finishing the finish line kind of gives you that extra boost of energy. He was like, hell yeah, I did this. And he's like, and when he did that, that's when I snapped that picture. And so that's where I got that stock image for that. And so when I did the painting where like all his influences and my influences growing up, because I mean, he's only 2 years younger than me, so we grew up together. And so I remember adding all those, like, you know, Ren and Stimpy, Mario, this really cool stuff.
Yoshi.
And
then,
all this really cool stuff. Maybe some Butthead was there too, because my older brother used to watch it all the time. And so then, and I painted my brother, you know, at that moment, like that defiant moment. It's just like everything that happens in life combined into one little thing that just builds up to this amazing moment.
And you were great at capturing that, I think, as an artist. You have to be multi-layered, you know, because it's not enough to know how to paint.
Yeah.
Then you have to airbrush.
Well, that's the craziest part, because in Instagram, there's a lot of kids out there that they do like an eye. And it's cool because that's a very technical, super hard structure part of the anatomy, you know, drawing, especially realistic, it's super hard. But there's a difference between a good painter, a good artist, and a good artist. The thing of a good painter is that he could probably duplicate or paint anything really well, and his skill in every brush stroke is perfect and things like that. But a good artist, he has to be able to express himself and express emotions of his surroundings mm-hmm. for other people to see. The only thing is, every once in a while, you could combine both, where you could have somebody that's a good sculptor or a good singer, and also very emotional driven to express those feelings. And so when you have that perfect storm, and he's able to showcase that emotion easier because people can understand it faster. Yeah. And so that's the thing about being a good artist, is knowing how to express yourself for other ones to see. Being a good painter helps, but you don't always have to be a good painter to be a good artist, and vice versa.
You know, interesting, taking it back to history, they were showcasing a documentary on Leonardo da Vinci. Mm-hmm. And the way that man's mind worked was amazing. So we are clearly, you know, familiar with the inventions and the masterpieces that he created. And I remember one of his diaries, because the concept of the documentary was diving into his diary. Mm-hmm. And that is like, no one has really ever dove into that aspect of his life.
Yeah.
And he talks about, he journaled his experience about sculpting a horse. He was commissioned by, I don't remember what monarch, mm-hmm. to sculpt this bronze horse at a certain scale. And of course, him riding on it. And so what he journaled was that, exactly what you were saying, I need to know how the anatomy of a horse works.
Yeah.
So what he did was he slept for a week or 2 weeks straight, if I'm right, in the stable with the horse.
Yeah.
To know
it's important
what he did.
It's important. But he's not, in the way you're not, in we're, the way we see it is just like, oh, it's a guy sleeping with a horse. But in his mind, he's not doing that. He's trying to understand why the horse skin moves that specific way when it turns. He's trying to make sense of everything that the horse does and why it does it. Because once he understands that, then he could just draw the horse any way he wants to, because he understands the horse itself.
Yeah.
And that's with every artist and everything. Like, if you don't understand like the structure of why things do what they do, then you don't, it's going to be wrong.
Right.
You know, why, like if a light is here and it casts a shadow here, how is the shadow going to react to that? To that perspective. You know, it's important to know, because then if you know that, then you're even closer to a more realistic portrait piece or sculpture, mm-hmm. because you understand that. And you're not missing those little details.
And the way he would take the notes as to what each part of his muscles would do, and they would react in certain mm-hmm. in certain stance, if he stood up, if he lay down, if he was on his hind legs for a second, or as he was galloping. And so he studied the science of what the anatomy of that horse was.
And a lot of times is because during that time also, there was no photographs. So you can't just make the horse stand still for you so you can sketch it. You only got like a split second. But what they did is they worked their mental muscle. So then like that, whenever they saw an image of the horse that they liked, they were like, okay, I'm going to have to remember that. And they sketched it out. But it's not just remembering it, because you can only get so far by remembering. But if you remember it, and then you also know how that leg works on the horse, you draw the missing parts that your memory can't fulfill with the information that you learn from the horse.
You know, and kind of segueing a little bit to what you're saying, mentally taking a snapshot. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the things that you would always tell me was, because I would ask, how do you come up with these concepts, man? Like, it's like, you know, you have like a beautiful woman with like a droid helmet on. I'm like, what is this, bro? Like, it is dope. And I'm like, who does this? You got dudes with like eyes in their hands and like, you know, an elongated neck. Yeah. And you got these like elements around it, like that are just visually just culture shock, and you're like, whoa, like that's dope. How did he think about this, you know? And like, pearls have shadows that make it look like it's 3D, and you're like, how does he do this, man? Yeah. So I remember like one day I asked you about that. I said, man, how do you,
what do you come up with this? He's like, oh, I paint my dreams. And I was like, oh, what yeah. are you smoking? What are you eating? Like, we just talked about this. We did just talk about, like, as yeah. far as how we kind of see our dreams being professed in our real life.
Yeah.
So when I see your paintings, man, I'm just like, what is he when dreaming?
He posts something and he sees dope on the IG, he knows that's me.
Yeah. Not only that, man, like, you have a way of, like, painting the woman figure
yeah.
in such a, I don't know, a Madonna. And I don't mean the singer, but I mean in a Madonna type yeah, gotcha. Of way, where every curve is how you would see the lips, their eyes, you know, yeah. their hair, bro, and their skin tone, dude. You have a thing about just in getting them to pose in a muse type of way.
Yeah. And you know what? That's it's really important for me, because it's weird, because for a long time, I was just kind of using images that I could find from, you know, I think back in the days was like DeviantArt. A lot of people used to pose for paintings, like, you could pay me as long as you give me credit, things like that. So I used to use a lot of DeviantArt people before. But then it got to the point where I was able to take my own photographs and my own stock images for models and things like that. And then I was able to kind of get more precision of what I was looking for. I wasn't just, this will work, and then you have to make it work. Now it was just like, this is, I could sketch something and then bring a model and practically duplicate that pose. Mm-hmm. For the most part, you know, because obviously, you know, you can't take liberties, and especially if you're coming from a comic book where it's like exaggerated. Yeah, so that yeah. doesn't always work out. but now it's like a little easier, where I could like be like, this is what I'm thinking, this is what's in my mind, this is what I'm developing, and then you could get a model to kind of duplicate that and lighting and things like that. So it is a lot easier now than it was before. Mm-hmm. But like I said, whenever you are using stock images, if you were to paint something, like you said, like from your dreams, you weren't able to do that yeah. exactly, because obviously they're not in tune with what your dream is, because it's, so it was one of those things that you had to sacrifice some things. But for the most part, you got to remember that the concept of the painting itself did have to describe that specific dream. And yeah, most of them are dreams. And it's really weird, because the inspiration comes from everywhere, you know, comes from everywhere, like comes from movies, comes from, you know, cartoons, comic books, graffiti, everything influences my paintings. And what it is just like, you pick and choose those things that kind of really stick out to you. But you also have that concept of your painting itself, either it comes from a dream or something that you think is a cool concept or an emotion that you need to get out. And then you pick and choose those things that work in play. And all it is just like, it's ammunition. You start, every time that you learn a new skill, every time that you see a new painting, every time you hear a new song, it's all ammunition that you could use for your creative process. Mm-hmm. And now I'm even getting to the point. So I started working for, there's a beer company that's opened up in Rockwall. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to do their cans have portraits of people. And they gave me specific inspirations. They were like, this is what we think this one should be. This is what we think. And I always done where I go and pick and choose like a wall of inspirations. But just inspirations, the inspirations I always get is like the stuff that I take like pictures of or things like that. But this time around was something that like I didn't have control over. So it was just really building a wall of inspirations that showcase what they were looking for. So I went out of my way to look for something that I wasn't usually. And what I realized is that it's really important for you to kind of do your homework before you start like a painting and things like that, because it does allow you to be more intricate on the mental thought of the execution of that painting. So it's weird, because I did these characters and they were like, okay, this girl needs to have hair like this. And so I started looking into hairs like this. Mm-hmm. And picking and choosing different those pictures. And then I was like, I want her to be, had this demeanor. Like, how do you describe somebody's personality? And that's kind of hard, because a lot of times it's an emotion. Whenever you're talking to them, that's how you get it out, you know? Right. But just off their face, off one image, one single frame, it's super hard. So then I started looking into, like, for example, if she was jealous, what does jealousy look like? So you get every movie, everything, that where jealousy comes up and you freeze frame that and you take that and you bring it with you. The same thing with pictures and things like that. And then you end up with this wall of things that are describing this individual. And then, so then you start drawing, you know, you're no longer duplicating just one image of what you post that girl to do, because then you already have the whole answer. This one right here is every single one of those pictures builds up to an answer, to a full picture. And I started doing that and came up with this. And then I realized that it was the most creative character design that I've ever done. And the crazy part is that I can knock out a woman really quick, but you know, men, I've done it like here and there, not as often as I should, but I also had to do guys, and the guys look so dope. I'm like, yo, can I keep this once? Yeah. I was like, why do I have to share them? And I realized that I learned something new. I mean, yo, I'm constantly learning something new, but I realized that now I don't longer just have to pick and choose one specific image. I could use that base and then start looking for 100 other things and then bring those into the thing. Kind of make them fit until they and you realize now it has so much more. Like if it had an expression, now it has like, you know, 100 times more expressive. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yo, this is super dope. I love this.
Man.
But yeah, that's...
And the thing is kind of when... And I have that piece out here that we exchanged. And I remember the concept behind it was you were basically doing a clock.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I was like, wait a minute. And then I remember you explaining it to me. Like, you see these circles around here? 1, 2. I was like, oh, I see it. And then your concept behind it was so... It just... I was like, well, who is this? And why would you pick this? And the way you broke it down to me was like, this dude has a science to his madness. Like, he is just... And the inspiration... It feels very... what's that master that with the melting clocks and
Salvador Dali?
Salvador Dali. It has a Salvador Dali huge flavor influence
growing
to it,
up
man.
When I started painting.
Yes, it has a Salvador Dali flavor to it, man.
Yeah.
And I remember you say, well, pick which one you want. And I was like, this one. And it just was such a, I don't know. I don't want to sound like a guy in the gallery with the scarf around my head. It speaks to me. But this one spoke to me. Yeah. No, I just was like, this is it. I don't know why, but yeah. I was like, just the composition, the color scheme, the just the crevices. And the way you did her hands are so just like, wow.
And you know, she's telling you the time, right?
Yeah, she's telling you the time. Yeah. That's right.
And the time is passing by. That's what the clouds are moving. Yeah. So the time is passing by. She's telling you the time. And also the picture means the memories of the time leaves behind. Wow. So it has a lot of depth to it. Also, you know, the sticky note, it's kind of like, you know, you got to remember every once in a while. The sticky notes are always so you can remember things. Mm-hmm. And it's because sometimes you don't want to forget those moments that they pass you in time. So that's the sticky notes, just so you could, you know, take a little bit of time and reflect on those moments. Yeah. So it does have a lot of little things that they kind of... And the background is so weird because the background is kind of like this wallpaper, but one of them is like sticking out, made out of gold type thing, because it's nothing is... Even in the back of your memories, I think even the little things are important, because a lot of times those, I don't know if you ever, there could be amazing memories, right? But a lot of the times they're triggered by, like, let's say you come across like a little card that is just like, oh, damn, I used to have this when I was a kid. And then those memories when you were a kid, when you play with that, come back because of that one little thing. So in memories, even the little things are important. And so that's why I was just like, even the background has to be important, because those are the ones that trigger those memories in time.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture of all that stuff.
And see, that's to kind of bring it into perspective, as he was diving into the, like, the detail that it takes for someone to, like, really dig into a concept, that encompasses why this, you know, his art just speaks to people. And it's not something that, I get it, you know, people are always like, art is art, right? Yes. But when you get a chance to really dive into, oh, he meant this, he meant that. And as you're talking to it, it's just like, yo, like, it all makes sense.
And you know, I'm not supposed to say anything.
No, he's not.
It's an artist. Like, yeah. I'm not supposed to say anything. I'm supposed to allow you.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, and you have, because I supposed to be just I paint, and I already let my emotions out. Mm-hmm. You know, I already spoke my piece, and then you put it out there for people to see, and then you let them do their thing. And then a lot of times they ask you, and even recently, the last showcase that I had in Austin, they really wanted me to break down the paintings. Like, they really wanted me to break down the paintings.
Like, you're like, what this, is this mean? Like, yo, man.
And
like,
I really didn't want
to
do it.
Yeah, you can't force me to do that.
Like, I can't force you to think, you know, what it's supposed to mean. It's like, that's not for me to do. You get whatever you want out of the paintings.
Yeah.
And it's important. You know, and another note, you said, like, I don't want to be that guy that comes in with the respect. But it's so funny because doing this for such a long time, I started realizing that there's almost like soulmates to the paintings that I create. And it always been in Houston, we did there was a show in Houston. I think it was for Juxtapose for M Square Gallery. And a guy came in and there was this one piece that I had. And I love this piece. I think one of my friends just shared it too. Again, the guy that actually owns it. It's where the cat is carrying this girl, you know? And the thing about it is trust in evil. That's the title of the piece. And he always looks kind of menacing, the cat that I paint and menacing. And he's carrying her out. He's kind of, in my personal description of that, it's he's a little bit of a savior, you know? But trust in evil was, it's like, okay, so how is that? And I was, you know, there's more to it. Sorry. There's more to it. And I was like, I'm not going to mess with it. Anyway, so a guy came in and he's just like, yo, bro. I just want to let you know that your piece, I think is phenomenal, and it really speaks to me. And I think,
what did I say?
Yeah, I think it goes in a higher level than what I expected. Less man, I don't know. My family and I have been struggling because I recently came out gay, you know, to them, and they're really like shutting me down, you know. And they're Christians, so they think that this is, you know, extremely like, you know, evil and things like that. But I saw your painting and you know, it made me, is there any way I can give you a hug, bro? It's like, I feel like crying right now. And I was like, that's what the art does. You know, it could have meant 100 other things to me, but to him, it meant that little thing that sometimes your parents are not right. You know, sometimes you have to love yourself and believe in yourself and be okay with the way you are, you know. And that's fine, because I mean, you're beautiful the way you are. But unfortunately, his parents and his family didn't feel that way, and he was heartbroken. But at that moment, he was just like, you know what, I'm gonna think about it differently, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my god, I don't even know
what, like,
I
what just, do you say just like you're say just like, bro, like, yeah. you just rock my world.
I was like, that's and now that's what that painting means, you know. He gave the title and the purpose to my painting, you know. And I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done that. In a million years, it wouldn't have been as good as what that painting meant to him.
Man, dude, that's powerful.
It's really cool. And that happens a lot every once in a while. And I like to push those boundaries with those paintings. And they come out of like, because people, the thing about my paintings is that I use everything. You know, frustration, anger, all that stuff. People can always let it out on a negative, destructive way. You could get angry at somebody and you could punch a wall, right? I use all that energy and use it in a positive way, in a creative, positive way, because then like that, I'm not wasting that energy. And I do the same thing with happiness and joy and everything. I utilize those feelings where you just want to do something. But instead of, you know, doing something bad or good, I just create a painting. And it's weird because I always felt like nobody would ever notice those emotions. But it seems like every once in a while, somebody comes in with like some real deep stuff that you're like, oh my god, you know, like I do need to see a psychiatrist.
More than just a hug.
More than
you know, one of the things you were bringing up, that the cat, right? I'm mm-hmm. familiar with the, I would say the persona of it, right? So and you know, obviously I want you to share into it and why, but there is this menacing cat that you have, mm-hmm. sometimes prominent, sometimes just kind of snuck in.
Yeah.
And I remember, I don't know if you told me that it was like your alter ego.
Yeah.
And I was always fascinated by that point of view, because I, looking at some of those paintings you've done, and he's in there, and I'm like, why does he put a cat?
Yeah, it's crazy because people always tell me, is it a wolf? Is it a cat? Uh-huh. And what people don't know is that it's a werecat.
A werecat. So did you just kind of whatever you want?
No. That's it's like a werecat, and the reason why it's a werecat is because it's the division of the individual. Of everything that's negative, that's evil, that's the the sadness, the depression, all that stuff. It's that individuality that takes over, you know, because for a long time, I don't know. And you can see it a lot with like people that know how to hide their feelings very well. What they do is, especially like I see a lot of people, friends of mine, where they're really depressed, you know. But when you go and talk to them, they're the coolest people on the face of the earth, yeah. You know. And it's that alter ego where they have this front, but in reality, they're dealing with all these situations, you know. But and it's almost like two different people. And that's where the werecat is at, because the werewolf, you know, it was always a man that he couldn't do any damage by himself. But once he turned into this wolf, yeah. Then he could really do some damage. Yeah. And a lot of times people get pushed to this limit. And a lot of times where you see the cat in my paintings, you also see the individual.
There yeah. It is, yeah.
So the individual. So the girl, for example, right there, she is the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat is her kind of alter ego, the one that protects her against, because a lot of times as yourself, you know, people could, you could get bullied and stuff like that, and then out of nowhere you snap and you start beating up on the bully, and you never knew you could do that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you never knew you could do that. That moment in time, that persona is no longer, you didn't know you could do that, which means it's like that's not you, that's not who you really are all the time. You're not right. Just gonna go out there beating up on people, but at that moment they push you to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Where you start beating up on this bully, and that allow you to see another side of you that you didn't know you had. And so every time that character is around, he's helping to guide that individual to a personality that she didn't know she had. Mm-hmm. Or he didn't know he had, and it allows you to do that. So that's why when Trust in Evil was, she was carrying her through this tough scenario, tough situation. It was her carrying herself through this hard times. Yeah, obviously that's not the meaning anymore, because right. somebody gave it a better meaning.
Yeah, they just said it speaks to me, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
There was one piece, man, that it always stayed with me too, because I loved it, man. It was this huge piece of, and there was a personal story that was behind that, because mm-hmm. it was a love letter, and I believe the guy was holding his stomach, and it was coming goodness. Out of blood. And I remember you shared that story. It's like, look, see this? And I was like, yeah. And I was actually coming from like, oh, this is a heartbreak piece. Like, yeah. This guy's heartbroken. This girl probably broke up with him.
Yeah.
And it was, the expression was just so dope that I was yeah. like, this is the one. Like, I got to have this one. And it was like, it's a huge piece,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
And, no, talk about the story, man. I just
and I don't know if you want to get too depressed and bump some people out.
Let's just go over it, man. Like, it's dope, bro.
So just to describe the piece. So it is a gentleman. It's a guy, and he's holding his stomach, and you can see the dread in his face of just the emotions, and the stomach is not bleeding red, because I didn't want it to be a statement, because it's not a physical bleeding. It's not physical bleeding what he's doing. It's more of internal bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not internal in the way, but you know, yeah. like emotional bleeding. And so I did a blue. I did the blood blue. And I did have a picture where it was a sketch of the girl, right? And it was just and I actually painted the piece of like an actual physical piece of paper with the lines and everything. And I actually used pencil to sketch her out on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a real drawing of a girl in a canvas, and then just letters of the things. But in reality, a lot of people were like, it's a breakup. It looks like a breakup story. It looks like a breakup story, but it's actually something that happened to me when I was younger. So when I was younger, I used to hang out with this one kid, which was he was super cool, but you know, he was kind of like a little thug, and mm-hmm. he was a bad little kid. Anyways, I hanged out with him, and he was just part of the crew, and we hanged out, and we did all kinds of cool stuff, and it was a bunch of other people too. But he had a sister, and his sister was, I think she was like 19 or something like that. She was a little older than us, and she had a reputation of being like the gangster of the neighborhood. Like, she was a real gangster. Like, now I'm not making like believe, like,
me vida loca.
She was like, yeah, like vida loca type, like, yeah. like she'll shank you type gangster. But she had a situation that happened in her life. Her older brother passed away, and he was also a gangster. and made her to kind of realize life in a different perspective. So she started kind of doing her own thing. I met her and she kind of charged me up. You know, it's like, yo, so you talking to my little brother, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, no, we're cool. And he's like, I'm just messing with you. I was just checking. because maybe we have to talk. Maybe not. I was like, whatever. Okay, cool. Anyways, so she was super cool. So I met her and we had like a dance, and her brother invited her to the dance. I think it was like middle school or something like that. And she came down to the dance to kind of just hang out and chaperone. I mean, whatever she was doing. And we walked back and she was like, yo, I really like you. You're really cool. I was like, you're amazing. She's like, you know what? You're like my little brother. I'm gonna take care of you. And I was like, all right, cool. So she became a really good friend. We talked all the time, and she'll wake me up in the morning, like Saturday morning. And she, as soon as she'll wake me up, she'll be there, like right there with breakfast and her brother, and we'll hang out and kick in. She was just amazing, amazing. And she did that for a really long time. Then there was a situation where she had to go to the hospital, you know? And so I brought her a mixtape, you know, because at that time you had mixtapes.
Mixtape, right? Yeah. Using the mixtape. Using the tape or using the CD? Which one
was it? No, it was a tape. It was a tape. Yeah.
Was it side A, side? What'd you do?
It was a real mixtape.
Okay, yeah. So the
B side and the
What we put in? We put in Latin Freestyle, Johnny Z. What we put in?
That's exactly what it was, man. Freestyle? Nothing with mixes. It was like mixes. And you know, we came from the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had good people. We had people that knew how to DJ really well. DJ really well. DJ Craze. Yeah. Shout outs. And so I had good music on this mixtape. And so she loved music, and I didn't know what was wrong with her. She was in the hospital, you know, things happened. I don't know what it was. So I just, you know, brought her a mixtape so she wouldn't be bored. And she was like, yo, this is dope. You know, I love this. Thank you so much. And she was super thankful. And she had a boyfriend. I think her boyfriend came over and he was a little bit more serious and he looked a little more pale, and like, but I didn't pick up on it. I was just like, okay, cool, whatever. And so then she came back and she was good. And she would just hang out and she lived life like no other. She just lived life. She really lived life. At that moment, I didn't know why she lived life the way she did. I just thought, you know, like, she's really cool. And so she'll pick me up at like 3 a.m. She's like, we're going to go get tacos. Like, she'll go to the club, come back, pick me up so we can go get tacos. And she will fill up, like, yo, I got to fill up this tank real quick. And she'll fill up the tank. And it was during that time that you fill up your tank and it was like the honor system.
Yeah.
You'll go inside and pay, but she'll fill up the tank and it will just run out. I mean, this girl was crazy. And so every morning, breakfast, same thing, nothing changed. And so then eventually, one morning, she didn't call me, and I was just like, you know, okay, cool, whatever. She's crazy. She's doing her thing. Maybe today it's just, you know, she's working or something. And then the next weekend came by, and same thing, you know? And I was just like, yo, she okay? I was like, I didn't think much about it. I was like, maybe she moved on. She's fine. I mean, come on. Technically, just a kid, you know? Like a freshman, so I don't know. It was like a freshman, I think, or something. No, it's, yeah, freshman. And I was like, whatever. Moved on. And then, so a month went by. And then I started to get worried. I was just like, yo, this is...
like, this is my homie.
This is my homie. Even, yeah, like...
She didn't even just say nothing.
I'm starving. There's no breakfast.
I've lost weight. I'm getting back in 28.
Yeah, I have to go check her out. So I went to her house. You know, I knocked on her door. Her mom opened the door. She looked at me. And her mom had this expression on her face. And I was just like, yo, is Joanna here? I haven't seen her in a while. And then she was like... I don't know how to tell you this, but she passed away about, you know, 2 weeks ago. It was some complications in the middle of the night. Apparently she just had a real high cholesterol, and she was a size zero. She was a tiny little girl. She had high cholesterol, or something like that. I don't understand, but one of her, she had like a clog.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that when we first saw her in the hospital, they were almost like technically doing like a bypass. And I didn't know none of this. So then in the middle of the night, she had a heart attack. And so she woke up, and obviously she didn't wake up. And it was like this whole thing. And it just happened so fast that nobody even had time to do anything. And so when she told me that at that moment, the feeling that you get of realizing that somebody that you really care for, you will no longer get to see, it's devastating. And it's so funny. For many years, I didn't know how to express it until I did that painting. And when I did that painting, it's the feeling of the floor just collapsing into a void. Mm-hmm. And you're like falling. And the feel of falling, the way you just like your stomach just gets these knots. And, mm-hmm. and you feel like it's just bleeding. And you gotta hold yourself.
That's right.
But yeah. you can't. Even no matter how hard you hold yourself, that pain and that feeling doesn't go away. And it's this everlasting like feeling of this loss and this void that you can't fill with anything. And at that moment, like I literally like I was already drawing, mm-hmm. but then I started like I draw here and there, and I did the things, but I never really did like physical paintings until like after she passed. I started doing like a couple of paintings and stuff like that, and then the graffiti stuff happened later on. They kind of really drove that thing, but I was already kind of like messing. So that expression of that painting signifies that loss of an individual that you truly care for, yeah. and not know how to deal with it at that moment. And you know, now looking back at it, I'm happy that I am an artist, because that allowed me to finally let those pains out, you know, and not have to deal with them. Now I could talk about them, but it before then it was very hard. But now it's a lot easier, and that painting definitely means that sacrifice of mm-hmm. that individuality where you just feel that pain.
Man,
so that's just one painting.
You know, and one of the things I was telling Dee that I knew you coming in here was just going to give the creative energy just a whole, like,
you. Well, I mean, I'm just bumming everybody down now.
we're going to pick it up.
So like I said before, these emotions, you know, you utilize like this emotions, you utilize those and you use them in a positive way, in a positive creative way. Uh-huh. Even if you have to paint something sad, it's okay, because you're still doing something positive mm-hmm. that you can physically see. And now it's no longer just emotional state. Now it's a physical state that you could carry around, and you can even burn it if you want to. You could sell it. You could do whatever you want with it. Now it's physical. And so that's why art is so important for me, because it allows me to do that type of thing and not have to live with it. I mean, obviously, you know, now you remember the fun parts and the good. So it makes it easier for me, though, definitely.
You know, I've heard this in a movie where it says, you know, I wonder, or I wish you would know you were in the good old days before you left them.
Join us next week as we continue our interview with Jaciel Flores on the American Experience.